Thank you, Valerie, and Clem, thank you also for hosting us. Because I'm going to read mine, I have to be able to do this. Anyway, when we were discussing what order we would make this presentation, someone suggested that we do it in alphabetical order because we are librarians after all. And then James looked at the order and said, oh, that will be good because we will go from the non-existent to the practical. So I'm here today to talk about the non-existent, but it is hoped that the first steps of the Digital Public Library will come about by April of 2013. The father of this iteration of a national digital public library in our country is a scholar with his roots in the Enlightenment. And as such, Robert Darton has spoken all over the world and also wrote a very persuasive piece in the New York Review of Books. He quotes our founding fathers extensively in the piece that he, in the New York Review of Books called, Can We Create a National Digital Library? I will put some of the quotes that he did quote from Ben Franklin and from Thomas Jefferson, but I do want to quote another piece of the article. Behind the creation of the American Republic was another republic, which made the Constitution thinkable. This was the Republic of Letters, an information system powered by the pen and the printing press, and a realm of knowledge open to anyone who could read and write, a community of writers and readers without boundaries, police, or inequality of any kind except that of talent. Like other men of the Enlightenment, the Founding Fathers believed that free access to knowledge was a crucial condition for a flourishing republic, and that the American Republic would flourish if its citizens exercised their citizenship in the Republic of Letters. Well, as librarians, we know that it's becoming increasingly hard to be a part of that republic because of copyright laws. I'm not going to discuss fair use at all today, but what about what has happened to the first sale doctrine in cyberspace? It's not even clear anymore that that exists. Electronic publishers, as you know, are wrapping work in digital rights management software. This is an example of an electronic book publisher's recent offering of Alice in Wonderland. No text selections can be copied. This book cannot be lent to someone else. This book cannot be given to someone else. And this is the worst. This book cannot be read aloud. These are some of the obstacles. Right. These are some of the issues that the Digital Public Library hopes to solve. So what is the Digital Public Library? I have to tell you, this is coming out of Harvard, and so I have found at least 20 definitions of what DPLA is. It's a comprehensive library of digitalized work that will be easily accessible to the general public. It is a large-scale, this part is important. It's a large-scale digital public library that will make all of this accessible to you, but it's a distributed system. Again, to quote from Robert Darton, a collection of libraries created to provide most of the books readers would want, a coalition of foundations, universities, and other nonprofit organizations formed to cover the costs, and a central organization designed to handle the problems of coordination, processing, and preservation. It sounds pretty easy until you get down to the details. The plan is to start with works in the public domain. And of course, we know that there are already projects that have started to digitalize our patrimony. And this is a list of some of them. And there are government organizations also that are doing things, which we also see. The next part of the plan is to do orphan works of works that have been long out of print. This is Robert Darton. He is at Harvard. he also has a foot in the Enlightenment, and a book that you might want to read is The Case for Books, Past, Present, and Future. These are members of the steering committee, and I don't expect you to look, but the reason to have this here is so that you know it is a broad spectrum of the library community, from Harvard, Stanford, UVA, the University of Texas, the Library of Congress, Texas State Library. There are large public libraries, Enoch Pratt from Boston, from Baltimore, the Boston Public Library, San Francisco Public Library, and there's even a small rural public library from South Carolina. The project is being overseen through the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard, with funding for 2 years from the Sloan Foundation and the Arcadia Fund. Arcadia is a British group, by the way. The project has been broken down into 5 elements: code, metadata, content, tools and services, and community. The backbone of the library will be an open source code. The DPLA platform will have no direct user interface. It is middleware. It allows access to content that is distributed across the internet and a set of services that will facilitate the development of applications that use the content. In the end, the platform's success will depend on how much metadata it can gather and how useful it can make that metadata to the end user. Metadata will include information about a specific item in the collection. It will range across everything: books, photos, multimedia works, and also catalog web content, such as courseware, item-related Wikipedia pages, TED Talks, and curated YouTube channels. This element also includes best effort deduping, addition clustering, and Ferber relationships, and ID resolutions, so that wherever you get your metadata from, whether it's open source, OCLC, or ISBNs, they will all point to the same item that's being described. At this point in time, creating digital content is not a primary focus, but getting access to those collections that are digital is. Another important aspect of this segment is exploring models for digital lending of in-copyright materials. In the struggle to define new working relationship between publishers and libraries, there's no lack of openness to new ideas. Not too long ago, Jeff Goldenson of the Harvard Library Innovation Lab at the Harvard Law School proposed library licenses as a way for publishers to grant non-commercial lending rights. This is through a licensing framework modeled on the Creative Commons license. A simple example, libraries could acquire and then lend ebooks after they've been on the market for a period of time. Another example would be granting performance licenses, where libraries can lend once sales fall below a specified threshold. I can tell you public libraries wouldn't like that. But anyway, a slightly different variation would be a license to a specific organization, say the Digital Public Library, that then all libraries could use. Another model may allow certain uses of copyrighted materials, say research that does not have a commercial application, can be lent for free, while more commercial material would trigger a licensing fee. I think that would be hard too. The next element is tools and services to enhance the use of content. This will include social sharing and networking services, research tools, and they say, as yet unforeseen applications. As we saw from the steering committee, DPLA is sincerely dedicated to making this a participatory platform in all aspects of its design, development, deployment, maintenance, and support. To develop these 5 elements of the DPLA, there are 6 work streams. This was another Harvard thing that I had to really work on, but it just means committees. In the first work stream, audience and participation, this committee met after ALA's midwinter conference in Dallas. This work stream will ensure that decisions are being made that best support the needs of the broadest possible user group. Its first big issue is to define clearly who is being served by DPLA. The DPI wiki states, if public is included in the title, we need to make good on the implied promise associated with using that term. We need to aim for broad and continuing involvement, both in planning and in implementation. The co-chairs of this work stream are Carla Hayden from Enoch Pratt and Peggy Rudd from Texas State Library. The big issue for content and scope is how much content do we need in order to get to critical mass? If we start with public domain materials, getting to in-copyright materials is essential if this is going to be a public enterprise. Some specific collections, including government documents, could be a way to add value quickly with some useful content. We need to learn from Europeana. And is it Europeana or Europeana? Okay. And other national projects, both their successes and failures. And this is, I think this is interesting. We need to distinguish between the idea of libraries and what they do and their collections. And we must also carve out things DPLA is not going to do, and this committee has said that they are not going to do preservation. The co-chairs of this committee are Rachel Frick from the Digital Library Federation, CLIR, and Amy Ryan from Boston Public. The big issue for the financial and business model is sustainability. Philanthropy is a good starting point, but the effort must have a business model and a means of drawing on core funding from libraries and governments in order to get to scale. Publishers are also a necessary part of this project. The chair is Paul Carratt from the University of Michigan. Governance is obvious. The wiki states that the governance should be broad and inclusive and must also have a means of moving forward. The co-chairs are David Ferrero, who is the Archivist of the United States, and John Palfrey, who was a big mover, and he's chair of all of DPLA, and he was at the Berkman Center as well as Harvard, but he has just been named the head of school at Phillips Academy. He has said, though, that he will not stop working on DPLA. Legal issues, and there are a lot of legal issues as we discussed with copyright. They hope to develop a package of law reforms that will help sustain DPLA, including the doctrine of first sale in a digital era, and an answer to orphan works. A few questions the committee has already considered. Within the bounds of existing law, what can libraries do to digitalize their collections and make at least some parts of in-copyrighted works publicly accessible? What models already exist in other national libraries? What can DPLA do to achieve legislation that permits digitalization, preservation, and dissemination of orphaned works? And how should DPLA address works whose digital rights are constrained by third-party permissions? The co-chairs are Jim Neal from Columbia and Pamela Samuelson from Berkeley. Now I've gone too far. How do I go back? Okay. Technical aspects to me seem daunting, but this may be the easiest because the big issues are standardization, interfaces, APIs, and other ways of communication for already or soon to be digitalized content. The co-chairs are Chris Freeland from the Missouri Botanical Garden Biodiversity Heritage Library and Martin Kafatovic from the Smithsonian Institution Libraries. Okay, I'm going to go forward now. This is where they've been, DBLA, and where it hopes to go. And this is where I should probably stop and talk about the beta sprint. At the public, at the first real meeting of DPLA in October 21st of 2011, they had already asked for a beta sprint, which was to ask for projects that had already developed technical specifications. At the October meeting, they narrowed it down to 6 projects. and three that may provide needed additional information. If you're interested in the projects, a list is on the DPLA blog. The next meeting will be held April 27th in San Francisco at the Public Library. The steering committee has set benchmarks to be met by April. I have not heard where everyone is on it, on that. And by 2013, they hope to have something running. I shared my slides with my business manager, and she said they were too boring, so I had to put animation in. Then I shared my slides with my husband, and he told me that there was too much animation. So there probably is, so anyway. But there are pros and cons of DPLA. Having a national digital library is a wonderful idea. Many, many nations are working on one, from Mongolia and Korea to Egypt and Italy. The United States should have one too. This being the library world, however, there have been some negative responses. Ed Summers warned that DPLA needs to be different from the web. If it is simply an index of what is already available, then it has not done its job. It needs to be loosely curated assemblage that is rich in helping us not only to find what is of value, but to appreciate the value of what we find. That's not what we are as librarians. There was a conference a month after the first plenary conference to create a blueprint for a national digital public library. This one was held in Los Angeles on November 15th. It was organized by the Los Angeles Public Library, OCLC, and IMLS. It called for a separate national digital library system reflecting the priorities of public libraries. They did ask John Palfrey to address the conference, and Martin J. Gomez, the general manager and city librarian of Los Angeles Public, said at that conference, "The idea for this conference came from my concern about the need for public libraries to be a greater part of any plan to create a digital library future. Public libraries have content that needs to be digitalized and made more widely accessible. We also, as part of our collective mission, have an obligation to ensure that the interests of the diverse communities we serve are represented in the planning for any digital future." A participant in this conference also remarked, "Simply calling the project a digital public library because it is on the open web is misleading. A truly public library should be designed and built from the beginning with a general audience in mind." The objective of DPLA can be summed up as a desire to make as much of the learning and cultural patrimony of the United States in the humanities, the sciences, the social sciences, and other areas of knowledge free and accessible to the citizens of the United States and around the world. The Digital Public Library of America does not yet exist, but it is getting closer to becoming a reality. Ta-da!
Barbara, the slide that started off, "I am astonished that people don't recognize this might do away with public libraries." That wasn't you being astonished, was it?
I'm sorry, tell me again.
The slide that started off, "I am astonished that people don't recognize," was that quote
from
you?
That was not from me, no.
Okay. There was quote marks around it,
I'm sorry.
I thought, wow, was Barbara astonished?
No. I'm astonished at everything in my life. But
yeah. Not I know that. The feeling. Thank you.
Clem.
I want to make a comment on the work streams. If you're interested in being sort of a participant in sort of shaping the direction of DPLA, you can join the DPLA listserv, and you actually can get involved in any one of those work streams. So I mean, they're very open to it. So when Barbara says those work streams were committees, they are in a sense, but they're also communities in a sense too. So you know, if you have an interest in a particular one of those areas, you can sign up and.
And really work on it, yes. And they really are really open, and they really want everyone to participate. And there are blogs, there are wikis, there are, you know, websites. And like you said, every work stream wants people to join their work, yes.
So So the end product that's visualized, will it be accessible to any computer from anywhere, much the way Google or Wikipedia are now, as contrasted with the online sources that we purchase and provide access to through library accounts?
The idea is they would be accessible to anyone across the world, free, from any computer or any smartphone or any way you can get to it. Any other questions? Thanks.